All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 18, Text Number 12. Yatad vapur bati vibhushana yudhir. Yatad vapur bati vibhushana yudhir. Yatad vapur bhati vibhushana yudhir. Avyakta chit vyakta madharaya dharihi. Avyakta chit vyakta madharaya dharihi. Babuvate naiva savamano vatuhu. Babhuvate naiva savamano vatuhu. Sampashyato daiva gatiryata nataha. Sampashyato divya gatiryata nataha.
Oh,
Yat. Which? Tat. That. Vapuhu. Transcendental body. Bhati. Manifests. Vibhushana. With regular ornaments. Ayudhaihi. And with weapons. Avyakta. Unmanifested. Chidvyaktam. Spiritually manifested. Adharayat. Assumed. Harihi. The Lord. Babhuva. Immediately became. Tena. With that. Eva. Certainly. Saha. He, the Lord. Vamanaha. Dwarf. Vatuhu. A Brahmana. Brahmachari. Sampashyatayoho. While both his father and mother were seeing. Divyagatihi. Whose moments are wonderful. Sorry, movements. Whose movements are wonderful. Yatha. As. Nataha. A theatrical actor. Translation and purport, but His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. The Lord appeared in His original form with ornaments and weapons in His hands. Although this ever-existing form is not visible in this material world, He nevertheless appeared in this form. Then, in the presence of His father and mother, He assumed the form of Vamana, a Brahmana dwarf, a Brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. Purport. The word Nataha is significant. An actor changes dress to play different parts, but he's always the same person. Similarly, as described in Brahma Samhita 5:33-39, the Lord assumes many thousands and millions of forms. Advaitam Achyutam Anadi Anantarupam Adyam Purana Purusham. He is always present with innumerable incarnations. Ramadi Murtishu Kalaniyamena Tishtan Nanavataram Akarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu. Nonetheless, although He appears in various incarnations, they are not different from one another. He is the same person, with the same potency, the same eternity, and the same spiritual existence. But He can simultaneously assume various forms. When Vamanadev appeared from the womb of his mother, he appeared in the form of Narayan, with four hands equipped with all the necessary symbolic weapons, and then immediately transformed into himself into a Brahmachari, Vatu. This means that his body is not material. One who thinks that the Supreme Lord assumes a material body is not intelligent. He has to learn more about the Lord's position, as conformed in Bhagavad Gita 4:9. Janma karma machaya devyam. Evam yoveti tatvataha. Evam yoveti tatvataha. One has to understand the transcendental appearance of the Lord and in his original transcendental body. Sachit Ananda Vigraha. So today we have a very auspicious day, the Vamana Dwadashi, or sometimes also referred to as Vamana Vijay. This is an appearance day of Lord Vamana Dev. We can have a very nice and beautiful celebrations here at Sri Mayapur Chandrodaya Mandir, organized by the our Mayapur Pujari department. So this is a day which is certainly worth of remembering and celebrating, because on this wonderful day, some millions of years ago, a devotion took a victorious place over the material principles of jnana, karma, bhakti, mukti, etc. So in these wonderful pastimes, we see that Bali Maharaj gives up all material conceptions of life and simply surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this wonderful form of Vamanadev. So here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada makes some very, very significant and important statements. He explains that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in many forms, these forms are not different. He uses the word nataha, and he explains that this is a significant word, just like an actor is the same person always. It's not like a different person plays a different roles. Actually, an actor becomes a well-known actor and a great celebrity if he's able to play many different roles. You know, you have some actors who can only play the heroes, you have some actors who can only play the villains, you have some actors who can only play in the romantic kind of scenario, you have some actors who are very funny and, you know, they can play in a comedical kind of a setup. But the greatest of all of them, great actors, they're able to perform in any type of role. They can be a hero, next time they can be a villain, next time they can be a very dry and another analytical person, another time they can be this romantic, sweet, wonderful personality, because of the ability to take on and understand the science of acting. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best of all actors. He can perform in any role he desires. There is no limitations whatsoever to the mood and the rasa he can display. The scriptures, particularly the Natya Shastra, explains that there are many aspects to the science of the theatrical science, to the science of drama and performance, but all of them are based in the science of rasa or mellows, that the various actors, when enacting different roles, they're supposed to express a certain mood, a certain mellow, a certain rasa. That's the word used in the Natya Shastra as well. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being the ultimate rasa, being the source of all transcendental mellows, can very easily and very naturally take on those different roles and perform those various dramas or pastime for the pleasure of his devotees. Nonetheless, he's the same personality. So this science of how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the same person, though displaying different qualities, attributes, and pastimes, is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. So at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, then Srila Vyasadev, he surrenders, or he chooses to offer his obeisances, he chooses to obey the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. He says, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He says that he bows down, he chooses to obey and surrender to the Supreme Lord Vasudev because he is the Param Satyam Dhimahi. He is the Supreme Absolute Truth. So Srimad Bhagavatam and its teachings go beyond the relative truths of this material creation. In the material world, there is always relativity. There is a different ways, different personalities perceive the very same thing. Therefore, even the great sages, they have a different opinions of who is the Supreme Absolute Truth. is in fact one of the qualifications of being a Muni or sage, is to have your own opinion, is to have your own view. If you don't have your own opinion of who is the supreme absolute truth, you're not really a Muni by the Muni standards. But Srimad Bhagavatam goes far beyond that relative understanding of the supreme absolute truth. The Lord, He manifests in different forms, but He's always the same person. Just the apparent difference in His personality, in His qualities, comes from our limited perception, or our limited understanding of that absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada often gives that analogy of a man in the dark room trying to investigate the nature of the object they have come across in that room. So the elephant. So there's a blind man, or sometimes he also says the man in the dark room. They enter the room, and with the help of the other senses, they touch, they minds, the intellectual powers, they try to understand the nature of the object they have come upon. So they come and they try to feel the elephant. And one of them, he grabs the trunk and he feels what it is. And he concludes, wow, this must be a gigantic snake, a very big snake, because it's soft, it's very flexible, it moves this way and that way. Another man comes and he grabs the leg and the elephant. He says, no, what are you talking about? This is not a snake, it is a pillar. And the third man, he laughs, he bursts laughing and saying, you guys are crazy, you are foolish. This is not a snake, this is not a pillar, it is a big boat, because he just grabbed the body of the elephant and he feels like a gigantic boat. So like that, due to the limitations of a conditioned consciousness, then there is no access to this absolute truth. We view the absolute truth to the means of our conditioned senses, to the means of our conditioned experiences. But Srila Prabhupada explained that this apparent obstacle on the path of discovery of the actual or supreme truth is actually quite simple. All it needs to be done, that somebody comes to the room and turns on the light, and boom, as soon as the light is there, then the man can very easily perceive, no, we were wrong, actually here is an elephant, it's not a snake, it's not a pillar, it's not a boat, it's an elephant. So Srimad Bhagavatam is compared to the rising sun of the transcendental knowledge, and it can very easily dispel the darkness we are situated in the various conception of who or what the absolute truth is. So by the grace of the great acharyas and the great authorities, the understanding and the perfection of life associated with this understanding is easily available. So Srila Prabhupada also points out that there is a class of unintelligent man who think that this form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not transcendental. It's just like any other material form you come across in this material creation. And he mentions that in order to actually understand the Lord and understand the Lord for who He actually is, one has to see His form as a transcendent, His transcendental body, Satchitananda Vigraha. So in this world there are many misconceptions of who the Lord is, and most oftenly the people who have those misconceptions, they consider themselves to be very intelligent, they consider themselves to be elevated, they consider themselves to be head and shoulders above the crowd, ignorant crowd who does not understand the nature of the absolute truth, the cause, the Brahman, and so many other names are attributed by them to that supreme absolute truth. So one common misunderstanding is of that of anthropomorphism and zoomorphism, where people whose intelligence has been stolen by illusion, they think that these transcendental pastimes and these transcendental forms of the Lord described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures are simply an imagination, are simply a projection of one's ideas of how this world operates, how things happen, simple-minded people's explanation of their day-to-day existence and life. So with anthropomorphism, they say that people, due to the poor lack of knowledge, due to lack of education, they take a certain universal laws and they project them on a person, and they give a personal attributes. Like sometimes they explain it in a different scriptural or other type of stories, that they say, well, you know, the famous analogy or the famous explanation given to explain this is that the traveler is going, he's traveling, and the sun and the wind, they try to take off his coat. But they, of course, say the sun is just a heat, it's just an energy, it's not that the sun is there standing in front of the person and is trying to take off his coat, or the wind is with his hands trying to, you know, take the coat of a traveler. It is just a forces. It's the wind, it's the heat which causes the person to take the coat, so the person feels more refreshed. So because they don't understand how this material world operates, because they sentimental, because they naive, because they're not interested in pursuing the cause and understanding how it all operates, they give this very simple explanations, and they give these human attributes to actually impersonal powers and impersonal potencies, energies which simply operate in this world. And that's all there is. There's no such a thing as a personality beyond. So sometimes this concept of zoomorphism is very similar, that they give animal attributes to those various powers in the universe. And, you know, in the poetry and in the, you find statements such as the ocean roared like a lion. It's not a lion, it's not like there is a lion roaring in the ocean, and like that is simply the travelers on the boat. They're very afraid of death because there is a big storm, and in that panic they just hallucinating and hearing different things, but in reality it's just water making some roar and the wind, etc., making some noise, and there's no a lion behind that. So that's how they explain, and they always claim that the people who use this kind of understanding and that kind of perception of the reality, who personalize those different powers of this material creation, are actually less intelligent and uneducated. But Bhagavad Gita explains that the concept of such this kind of personalities and the concept they come up with is actually due to their intelligence being stolen by Maya. And in fact, people who have that kind of understanding, they are actually closer to the absolute truth than they are, because beyond those different perceptible powers of the universe, there is the person. There is the deity of the sun, there is the deity of the wind, there is the deity of the water, and beyond them, then there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So some of the theological sciences, contemporary theological sciences, that's how they explain religion, that this is a simply psychological needs people have to rationalize and explain their existence, and they project those different powers into a personal form to make it easier for them to relate and understand. Then we have those impersonal understandings of the Mayavadis, that they consider to the supreme absolute truth to be formless. And in the similar way, this is a concept which is born out of illusion, because beyond that impersonal effulgence of the Supreme Brahman, then there is the transcendental form of the Lord, who is the source of everything. So Srila Prabhupada recommends that in order to become self-realized, and in order to become situated on the transcendental platform, one has to understand the Supreme Lord as He is, as the one person manifesting different pastimes and different qualities according to the need of the time and the place He chooses to appear. An understanding of the Supreme Personality of God, that realizing that transcendental nature of the Lord, is not a simple thing. It is not as simple as it appears. The Lord can be known only through devotion. It is not an intellectual exercise. It is not an emotional experience caused by the interaction of our mind with the various elements of this material creation. It is something which can be only known through the transcendental process of devotional service. So it is not easy, even for great devotees, to realize this truth about the Supreme Absolute Truth, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. We see in pastimes of Vrindavan, even great personalities, great devotees, such as Indra and Lord Brahma, had some difficulties realizing that this boy, this son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Damai, is the Supreme Absolute Truth. They had some difficulties with that. That was bewildering even to them. How is it possible that here the Supreme Absolute Truth, the maintainer, creator, and destroyer of the worlds, the object of meditation for the great yogis and sages, is playing like an ordinary child? This was something beyond the comprehension. They had great difficulties understanding that this is the same person who lays at the casual ocean, and from his navel Lord Brahma took birth. This is something they could not understand. And therefore, those wonderful pastimes took place, and by the grace of the Lord, they were able to give up that mundane conception of who is the Absolute Truth, and surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So here, in this pastime of Vamanadev, the same thing takes place. The bhakti, devotion, triumphs over the material conceptions of life, and Bali Maharaj surrenders to the lotus feet of Vamanadev. So this is not the first time this pastime took place. We know that Vamanadev appeared as a result of devotion of Vishnu and Sutapa. In the millennium prior to that, they were performing some great austerities. They were controlling the urges for material sense enjoyment, sustaining themselves only on dry leaves, etc. And the Lord was very pleased with the austerities, with the extraordinary austerities, and then He appeared in front of them in the form of Narayana. And the Lord asked them, "I'm pleased with your austerities. Please tell me, what do you want? What kind of boon would you like to receive from me?" And then Krishna, in her appreciation and understanding that here is the embodiment of transcendental rasa, she said, "Please, my Lord, become our son." So that statement really surprised the Lord, because it is not the first time that the Lord appears in front of some great yogis and tyagis. These things go on in this world, but this is very rare that the Lord is asked for a boon of devotion. So he became very, very happy and very satisfied. So he said, yes, I'm very happy that you've asked me to become your son. And he said, I will appear, take birth 3 times as your son. So shortly after that, then he became the son, their son. And then in the next millennium that he appeared as the son of Aditi and Kashyapa. And then for the third time, then he appeared as the son of Devaki and Vasudev. So here in this particular pastime, then the Lord appeared due to the prayers of Aditi and Kashyapa and the devotional activities again. This is a very nice example also that devotion is something very, very dynamic, that is not that once some devotional experience or some devotional accomplishment is achieved, then we can stop. No, and Vasudev of Aditi and Kashyapa, Krishni and Sutapa, they managed to please the Supreme Lord, but they did not stop on that. They continued with the devotional activities. They didn't take it for granted. Okay, now we have a relationship with the Supreme Lord, and we can relax, and you know, we can kind of slow down. There is no hurry. There is no need to be fanatical. You know, it's better to now, you know, since we have accomplished something, then we can take care of the other needs in our lives. No, they just carried on with the devotional activities. So Aditi, she is also the mother of the demigods. So Bali Maharaj, under the guidance of his guru Shukracharya, he performed great austerities. He wanted to be the emperor of the world, just like his great ancestor. They managed to rule over the entire universe. So he asked Shukracharya for some guidance of how that can be accomplished. And Shukracharya explained to him that he has to please the Brahmins, has to serve the Brahmins, and if he serves the Brahmins, then he will be able to attain any power he desires. So he very faithfully followed the instructions of his guru, and he served the Brahmins. He performed many, lots of charity and austerities and sacrifices, and as a result of that, he became very powerful. So he came to Indra's abode, and a little conflict began, and Indra could immediately understand that the powers possessed by Bali Maharaj are far beyond his capacity to deal with. So he went to his spiritual master, Brihaspati, and he requested him for some guidance, saying, well, look, in Bali is so powerful, how can I defeat him? And Brihaspati, he explained that, look, he is so powerful because he has gotten the blessings of the Brahmins. And the Brahmins are very dear to the Supreme Personality of God. And so one who pleases the Brahmins becomes immensely powerful. And there is nothing you or me can do to stop him now. The only person who can stop Bali Maharaj is Lord Vishnu himself. There's nobody else who has a power equal to Bali Maharaj in this creation. So he recommended to the sons of Aditi that the best for them is to make themselves invisible, to hide from the asuras, and wait for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to come and resolve their problems. So they followed the instruction of Brihaspati, and they waited. But in the meantime, their mother Aditi became very disturbed because, well, after all, they were their sons, her sons, and she felt a great separation from her children, and she felt very sad for the situation, that just a little before they were the lords of the universe, and now they have to hide. So she wasn't very happy with that. So she naturally, due to her motherly affection, she wanted to help them. So she performed this Payavrata with her husband, and as a result of that, then we come to this place where the Lord appears, and the Lord, in order, out of his causeless mercy, in order to clear the doubts of the atheistic people, clear the doubts of beginners on a spiritual path, he manifested his Narayan form, which first, which that form is also not normally visible in the world, but because it carries with itself so much awe and reverence and opulence, it is generally easier for people to accept and understand that form as the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he manifested that form. And shortly after that, then he manifested the form of a little Brahmana boy. Because after all, it was not that the desire of Aditi and Kashyapa to serve the Lord in the Dasyaras, or serve the Lord with awe and reverence, but serve the Lord in the paternal relationship as the parents. So in order to facilitate that service, he had to take a form of an ordinary child, so they could have that interaction. So as Prabhupada explained, he took, like an actor, he took a form, that same Supreme Absolute Truth took the form of a little boy. And of course, Vamanadev wasn't an ordinary boy. Like we here in Mayapur, we have this festival, and one of the boys, always small children, takes on that service, that you know, he's dressed as Vamanadev, and he's provided different footsteps and worship, and it is very joyous. All devotees are very, very happy always, because he's so cute, a little boy, and so sweet, and he's got so, all these nice qualities, and he's eating this nice food. But men, women, old, young, everybody is pleased to see that little Vamanadev sitting and taking that service from the pujaris. So this boy, this Upendra, he was not an ordinary boy. His beauty, his splendor exceeded anything known to anybody in this world. It was far beyond any child. Besides that, he was a dwarf also, so it's not just he was cute because he was small, there was more cute because he was even smaller and even more dependent and like that. So, you know, he was such an extraordinary child. Anybody who saw the child became very, very attached and very attracted to his beauty, his sweetness, his wonderful qualities. So, when finally he grew up and he became 5 years old, and he received his initiation, Upanayanam ceremony, where he received his belt, grass, Kusha grass belt, and he received his deer skin and his kamandalu and his stick, and he began his brahmachari vrata. Then the, one of the first things those brahmachari boys, they're supposed to do is to become a menial servants of the teacher, of the guru. And one of the things they generally do is they go out and they beg for the benefit of the spiritual master. So that's what he did. He set off for collecting some bakshish, some bhiksha, some charity, and he went to Bali Maharaj's court, who at that time was the emperor of the universe. And when Vamanadev appeared in the court, and he outshined with his splendor, with his tejas, all those great personality, great brahmans, great sages such as Shuklacharya, they appeared like a fading star in the comparison to the rising moon. And Bali Maharaj was very happy as well. This is such a wonderful boy, and he prided himself to be a great charity giver, a follower of Varnashram system, etc. So, you know, he was very pleased and very blessed, in fact, to see that boy. He understood by giving charity to brahmachari, by giving charity to a brahman, that unlimited benefit will be available for him. Only by the grace of those brahmans, he was able to attain the status as the emperor of the universe. And only by continuing that service to the brahmans, he will be able to maintain it. So therefore, he asked Vamanadev if there is any charity, any money, anything at all he would like to have. And Bali Maharaj offered that, and Vamanadev said yes. please give me 3 steps of land. And Bali Maharaj thought it wasn't a very nice boon. I mean, he's the Lord of the universe. It's not like he's everything. It belongs to him from the bottom to the top of the universe. It's at his disposal. You know, why don't you ask for something more? You know, I'm in a position to give anything you desire to you. And you're just simply asking for those 3 things. So being in this illusion, overwhelmed by his material position, prestige, opulence, he was not able to understand that this little boy, very unassumingly looking boy, is actually the master of the universe. He is the real possessor of everything. So he tried to convince him to take more, but Vamana Dev, in a very sweet and nice way, a very boyish way, said, no, just give me those 3 steps. And of course, Shukracharya, being a great scholar, being a great sage, he could understand, look, it is not an ordinary boy, Bali Maharaj, don't be fooled by this cuteness and sweetness and smallness and whatever, you know, was there, don't be fooled. This is Lord Vishnu himself, your foe, the enemy of our kind, the friend of the Ditya. Adityas, friend of the demigods. So don't do anything. Just say okay. And he gave many different reasons why he should not keep up his words. You know, because he being an expert in Shastra and Artha Shastra and Dharma Shastra and so many other Shastras, he said, look, it's not good to break a word, but there are circumstances when you can break. It's not considered to be improper. It's not considered to be diminishing to your position if you break, if you just said something in joke, or if there is a higher good at stake. It's okay to break a word. And he tried in many ways to convince Bali Maharaj about the mistake he's just about to commit. But Bali Maharaj, being a descendant of Prahlad Maharaj, and having a natural attraction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could not change his mind. And he weighed all the pros and cons and look at this and look at that. And the end, he understood, well, whatever is going to happen, I just going to trust this little boy, though I don't understand and I don't know, but I'm going to put my faith and my trust in that little boy and let's see what happens. And even though he decided to give it, Shukracharya still tried to stop him. So generally when some agreement is being made and always some water is being poured to seal the deal. So Bali Maharaj was about to pour the water from his kamandalu. But Shukracharya, he became very, very small and he got into the spout and he was blocking the water so he doesn't make the agreement. In his mind, he was doing a good thing for the rest of the asuras and trying to stop, and they tried to pour water and they couldn't. So Bali Maharaj took a little kusha straw and tried to clear the spout and he poked Shukracharya's eye. And even till today, this is there in Jyotish Shastra, then the natural karakas or significators of eyes and vision is sun and the moon, because they're luminaries with the help of sun and the moon, and we are able to see. So generally they consider to be important in knowing or learning about the person's eyes and the vision. But also Venus became a significator of an eye, for the eyes, for the, you know, clarity of the vision and different diseases, eye disease, etc. Because of that pastime, he was given that responsibility or that portfolio of being one of the planets responsible for the vision. So the water came out, the agreement was made, and the Lord made his first step, and with the first step then he covered half of the universe, and with the second step, well, the universe wasn't big enough, he made a hole with his big toe, in the covering of the universe, and he went to the all the way to the abode of Lord Brahma. And it is explained in the eighth canto that although Lord Brahma's abode is the highest, most opulent, most brilliant of all the abodes in this material world, when Lord Lotus feet appeared in the abode of Lord Brahma, it became very lifeless, it became very unattractive, it became nothing in comparison to the lotus feet of the Lord. So Lord Brahma and very other demigods, they became very, very blissful. You know, the lotus feet of the Lord are always very dear to the devotees. So just imagine, you get the little feet of the deity, and it's so nice, you put it on your head, but you get like a foot of the size of the half of the universe, a real, real utsav, a real festival for the devotees. You want the lotus feet, here you go, bang, as big as it gets. So they were all very, very joyful there. They had the darshan of the lotus feet, and not any lotus feet, a very, very majestic, very significant, very big lotus feet. So they worshipped the feet of the Lord, and Bali Maharaj became in a very difficult situation, because still he promised, and he was still attached to mundane morality, and keeping his word, and keeping his prestige as a great donator and a very charitable person, and here's the Lord has taken two steps and there's nothing left, and he wasn't very sure to do what to do. And you know, he understood that because of his activities he's going to be punished and he's going to be removed from his post and all those things. Suddenly the fortune has, you know, so-called fortune has turned against him, and Garuda appeared and he tied him with the ropes of Varuna, and he was laying there helpless thinking, what should I do in this situation? And you know, being very intelligent, he was thinking of so many options, so many ideas, you know, whatever you could think in this material world to solve your perplexities, to solve your difficulty, he could think of all those things, but he couldn't find any answer. And finally he decided the only thing I can do in this situation is to take shelter of the lotus feet of Vamanadev. And he said, my dear Lord, please put your third foot on my head. And that's what happened. The Lord put a foot on his head and he became very, very blissful and overwhelmed with the love of God. His great-grandfather Prahlad Maharaj appeared, and there were so many beautiful prayers and interactions, etc. And the Lord was very pleased, and he blessed him that he will become the Lord of one of the subterranean planets, which is Sutala, which is even more opulent than the abode of Indra. And him and the Prahlad Maharaj departed to that place, and that was the end of the pastime. Indra and the other demigods, they returned by the grace of the Lord, returned back to Indraloka. And Vamanadev, he made this wonderful pastime, and he showed that actually of all the different activities, you know, there's demigods, and Shukracharya also received blessing. He was performing karma, but by the Lord's grace you could understand that karma is not something which can give a happiness. The great gyanis, the great sages, they also understood that the only real satisfaction, the real shelter in this world is the lotus feet of the Lord. So like this, he delivered so many different living entities at once from a different misconceptions of what's the real shelter, what's the real ashraya in this world. So we will end here. And if, I don't know, any questions or comments? We have not really that much. Thank you very much. It's already 9 o'clock, so we will end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Vamana Dev Ki Jai, Shri Mahapur Chandra Daya Mandir Ki Jai, Samaveda Gaura Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai, Jai Nitai Gopi Manandi Hari Hari Bhagavatam.